Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and it's not every night that we begin with a bit of verse. Still, it seems appropriate for tonight's show, so here goes. The program is called Soundcheck, and on the show tonight, live music by a group that is really, really tight. A lot of you are fans already of the band called Drive-By Truckers. They'll unplug all their gear and play acoustic for you folks. Dom Flemons and his banjo will be stopping by as well. The ex-Carolina Chocolate Drop is dropping by to tell a story that's a mystery, a history, and hell. It's got politics and race and jokes you'll laugh and you might yell. You never would believe it's from a century ago, but we'll start with some more recent songs. Here's one I think you'll know.
If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do,
what kind of rhyming scheme is that? Well, a pretty good one as it turns out. The Beatles song From Me to You is a good example of a band using some pretty basic rhymes to pretty great effect. Now, as the opening of tonight's soundcheck might indicate, all rhymes are not created equal. And using a little bit of science, the writer Ben Blatt has worked out what he thinks might be the most common rhyme in the history of pop music. One hint? You've already heard it on the show tonight. You can find Ben Blatt's recent article for Slate on soundcheck.org. Hi, Ben.
It's great to be here.
So before I ask you to unveil the most common rhyme in pop music history, let me ask you, what set you down this track?
Well, for Slate, I read a lot about pop culture and like kind of weird things from a math or statistics angle. And obviously, listening to music all the time, I've always wanted to kind of explore that and in my head, the most obvious thing was, you know, some of these songs that you hear, maybe they were written 30 years ago or today, they sound so similar in so many ways. The themes change a bit, but at the end of the day, they're kind of similar. So I just had the thought of, you know, how are these songs similar? How are they been changing over time? And in particular, looking at the rhymes within the song seemed to be one way to kind of focus in on that.
So bringing kind of statistics to bear on...
Exactly.
On how... So you're pulling the songs apart, looking at the words... And, all right, so tell me then, what is the most common rhyme in pop music history?
The most common rhyme in pop culture history is Do With You. And that sample is every top 100 song for the last 50 years.
So a pretty big sample.
Pretty big sample, going all the way back to 1963.
But you single out a Justin Bieber song in your piece for Slate. Why?
Well, Justin Bieber, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with using the Do You rhyme, but some bands and some artists do use it more than others. And Justin Bieber, even though it is the most popular rhyme, he still uses it much more than other pop artists. I believe
so. Multiple songs, multiple times in a song.
Exactly. I believe in Justin Bieber's relatively short career, there's 12 different songs where he uses that rhyme. And in comparison to some other bands, the band Queen, who had more songs, never used the same rhyme more than 5 times in 5 different songs.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly, statistically, if someone rhymes Do and You 8 times in one song, that only counts as one use of the rhyme.
Right. So the very simple method was how many songs was each rhyme used in. Mm-hmm. So if Do You was used 10 times in one song, that was counted once. And the reason for that is some bands have a chorus where a rhyme could be, you know,
sure,
you wouldn't want to count it 10 different times.
All right. I don't know how many times we're going to count it in this little excerpt, but here's Justin Bieber and a song called All Bad.
Like
Justin Bieber, All Bad. So rhyming do and you, but also, I mean, sounded like do and you right next to each other. So it wasn't even like end-of-line rhyming. It was sort of internal rhyming as well.
I believe it sounded like to me he had an internal rhyme and an end rhyme with do you there. So we only counted end rhymes. I'll give Justin Bieber some credit. He did rhyme envy and jealousy, which I think is much, much lower on the chart, although those are synonyms, so maybe the creativity goes down a bit.
Now, we're speaking with Ben Blatt, staff writer for Slate. His recent article is Counting Couplets and explores the most common rhymes in the history of pop music. Do and you is number one on the list. How common is it? Who else leans on the do you couplet?
We were picking on Justin Bieber, but that really is not incredibly fair to him. It's very, very common through all sorts of artists. I believe the Beatles, Kanye West, Madonna, all these different artists have do you as their most frequent rhyme. It's really a matter of if you're writing a love song, a romantic song, at least my theory is it's very hard to escape that rhyme.
Well, you're going to use words like me and you. And so me and be is on your way up on your list of the most common rhymes. Me and see, true and you. Were there any surprising couplets on the list?
Looking back, there really are no rhymes when you look at them. You say, oh, that's unusual. I think maybe night and right was a bit higher than I would have guessed.
Uh-huh.
But again, if it's maybe a romantic song, it's not too surprising. But the amount of times that me and you are used in songs really outnumber everything. And I think kind of, you know, being anchored to those two words, you just have to find words that sound like them.
Right. And most of the your piece lists the top 20 most popular rhymes in pop music history. Most of them are one syllable. Not all of them, though.
Right. I believe in the top 20, there's the longest word in terms of syllables is maybe baby and me, which is not quite
baby and me. That's a rhyme.
We counted half rhymes.
Okay.
in the piece.
What about forever and together?
Forever and together, I don't believe that made the top 20, but it was in the top 100. And for a multi-syllable rhyme, that was the longest that we found.
And that's also a half rhyme.
Right.
So forever, together. And it seems like with all these different couplet choices, there is one song by one band that seems to use them all, and that is this tune from the Turtles.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me. Ease my mind. Imagine how the world could be so very fine, so happy together. Toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me.
Now, Ben, as you listen to that song, Happy Together by the Turtles, is there like a little bell going off in your head? Ding, 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 me and you. Ding, 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 do you. Ding, 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 night and right.
I really wish I had thought of that song when I wrote the article, because that really does kind of capture the simplicity of pop songs, which can be a fine thing. I happen to like that song a lot.
Sure.
But yeah, when I was working on this piece, it took over a week to get all the data and go through everything and staring at rhymes all day. Whenever I was listening to music while working on it, I would just kind of hear these rhymes over and over, and it would kind of trigger going back to staring at the page.
What about the classic sort of cliche that we use to describe poor poetry or poor songwriting, namely Moon, June, Spoon? Did you hear a lot of Moon, June, Spoon when you were doing your research?
I can't say that Moon, June, Spoon popped up in the most common rhymes. I'm sure it was in there somewhere. Perhaps artists are wary of falling into that trap.
Do trends in rhyming change? I mean, you talked about, you know, do and you going back 30, 50 mm-hmm. years, but there are parts of your article that suggest that certain couplets, certain rhymes, were more common 30 years ago than they were 10 years ago.
Exactly. So we looked at also the change of rhymes over time. I know we already talked about Baby Me maybe being a half rhyme, but that really peaked, I believe, in the late 90s. And there's no single reason I could point to why this must be the case, but you could say kind of the rise of boy bands and kind of the rise of a particular slang term being more popular. So the change of these rhymes, there is a change of rhymes over time, but there's maybe not anything too huge. It wasn't like Do You is non-existent 30 years ago.
But Do You, according to your article, seems to have peaked around the late 90s, 98, 99, when it was used in 15% of all of Billboard's year-end Hot 100 songs. Whereas in the 1960s, you point out that Cry and Goodbye was 8 times more popular than it would become later.
Right. So I guess in that case, you know, again, my theory would be, again, kind of whether or not a song is maybe a love song or not, or maybe just there's one song that kind of triggers a chain reaction where people hear something and they consciously or subconsciously insert it into their music in the future. It can certainly change. And it's with changing language and kind of changing what's cool and what's not, you would expect that rhymes to change again in the future.
Right. So in the 60s, we wanted to cry goodbye. And in the late 90s, I wanted to do you is, I guess, the takeaway from this. Elvis Presley's song Marie's the Name is one of those cry goodbye rhyming songs. Let's hear a little.
Blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere. And Marie's the name of his latest flame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were a-burning. I wished him luck and then he said a goodbye. He was gone but still his words kept returning. What else was there for me to do but cry? Would you believe that yesterday this girl was in my arms and swore to me she'd be mine eternally. And Marie's the name of his latest flame.
Seems kind of obvious, Name and Flame, but that's not on your top 100, is it?
Name and Flame, I don't think it cracked.
Yeah, all right. Does that make it good or bad songwriting when you see the same rhymes or, conversely, when you see a rhyme that you haven't seen before?
I really think it's up to the context which is used in the song. I can't blame someone for using Do You. I think if you made it the centerpiece of all your songs, then there may be a problem. But I think it's kind of hard to avoid these very common rhymes.
So as you said before, going back to that Turtles song, Happy Together, which is a great song, you know, it's like every cliched rhyming couplet you could think of, and yet somehow it works for them.
Exactly.
All right, so we're speaking with Ben Blatt, staff writer for Slate. The recent article is called Counting Couplets. It explores the most common rhymes in the history of pop music, and you can find it on our website at soundcheck.org. We've talked about, you know, changing tastes in couplets, you know, in rhymes and how that can change. What about the advent of hip-hop? What did that do to you know, songwriting, to rhyming couplets?
Hip-hop in general, one thing that's fairly clear is that they have kind of longer songs with more involved lyrics.
And more internal rhyming schemes.
And more internal rhymes. Unfortunately, internal rhymes were not picked up. Maybe that's the next project.
Yeah.
A bit more difficult to get to. But hip-hop and rap definitely rhyme more. There's more verses and generally a lot more kind of going on in there.
Right. So what was your – when you finished writing this and you looked at what you had done did this change the way you think about songwriting? I mean, what did you take away from this?
Well, I describe myself as a music fan. I've never created it myself, so just purely as the observer here, I do listen to a variety of music, and it really kind of brings home that even though, you know, sometimes you think the melodies are very different and the performances are very different, the lyrics are very similar, even beyond rhymes. Is kind of the same themes and same messages, but with maybe just, you know, tweaks of words
right
here and there, but maybe not at the end of the lyrics even.
Well, as you said, you know, songwriting often revolves around me and you, and words that rhyme with me and words that rhyme with you are going to keep cropping up as they do. on Ben's list of the top 100 most common rhymes in pop music, and you can find his article on our website at soundcheck.org. Ben, we're going to wrap up with a little bit from The Clash, Magnificent Seven. What are we listening for here?
I would listen for the same rhymes that we've been listening for the entire time. We'll see if any of them pop up.
All right, Ben, good to see you.
Great to be here.
Ring, ring, 7 a.m. Move yourself to go again. Cold water in the face brings you back to this awful place. Knuckle merchants and your bankers too. Let's get up and learn those rules. Weatherman and the crazy chief. One says sun and one says sea. AM and FM, the PM too. Turning out that boogaloo. Get you up and I guess you out. But how long can you keep it up? Give me Honda, give me Sony. So cheap and real phony. Hong Kong dollar, Indian cents, English pounds and Eskimo pence.
Ahead on the show, a performance by Drive-By Truckers. But first, Dom Flemons is no stranger to the Soundcheck studio. He's joined us in the past with the folk trio Carolina Chocolate Drops. Today, he's here to tell us about an unsung hero, and Dom Flemons will play a bit, too. This is Soundcheck.
The jersey pleaded, like he wrote it, like he wrote it, down in D-Day. The jersey pleaded, the clerk he wrote it down.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singing in the background is 20th century blues musician Gus Cannon. I can clearly remember the first time I ever listened to Gus Cannon, because it was about an hour ago. But folk musician Don Flemons, who you may know as one of the founding members of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, first heard Gus Cannon about 10 years ago, and it set off a flurry of research and discovery about what turns out to be a pretty complicated figure in 20th century music. Dom recently wrote about Gus Cannon for the Oxford American Magazine, and he joins us here in the Soundcheck studio. Dom, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here, John. Thanks.
So you first heard Gus Cannon on a recording on the Stax label, the famous Memphis funk and soul label.
Yep.
What was it?
Well, it was a record called Walk Right In, and I went to the Stax Museum a few years back, and I asked him about it. I said, well, tell me about this record, because it was the very first Stax record to come out, was this Gus Cannon record. So basically, Gus Cannon had a legal dispute with the group The Rooftop Singers, who had a hit song with his song Walk Right In.
Walk right in, sit right down, daddy, let your mind roll on.
And so after that, he did a recording. And so the parents of the people who ran Stax Records were old-time and bluegrass fans. And so they were trying to do a fledgling label of folk and bluegrass. And then the kids took it over, and it became the Funk and Soul label. So it was kind of a local history of a local hero in Memphis.
And see, here I was thinking, wow, Gus Cannon, someone whose music I've never come across before. And it turns out it's like this really familiar, popular song that he wrote that the Rooftop Singers had a big hit with in the early 60s. Listen to the original version, or at least an original version from Gus Cannon.
I went to the old lady's house one day, and she told me, walk right in. I said, I thank you. She said, well, will you sit down? I said, thank you, ma'am. She says to me, she said, well, how long you gonna be here? I said, I won't be here but a little while. And so that night, somewhere or another, I commenced a dreaming. Got up there about 12 o'clock one night there, 1913, so got old old banjo. I said, you know one thing, Bessie? I said, you told me to walk in here. Now, you know I must get something out on that. And this is the way it went.
Now you walk right in, sit right down. Baby, let your mind roll on. Will you walk right in, stay a little while. Now, baby, don't you stay too long. Now, I know it's everybody talking about the way you're walking, baby. You look to lose your, that's your mind. I say you walk right in, sit right down. Baby, let your mind roll on. Mama, baby, let your mind roll on. Play the water.
So that's a 1963 recording by Gus Cannon of his own song, Walk Right In, which Dom, as you mentioned in your article in the Oxford American Magazine, which, by the way, listeners, you can find on our website at soundcheck.org, I mean, this is a song he had originally written and recorded decades earlier.
Absolutely.
Well, what was it that first struck you when you heard this, you know, this early Stax record of Gus Cannon? Was it the kind of exaggerated speech of the introduction?
Well, it was a thing. At first I just heard the music without really thinking too hard about it, and I thought it was very entertaining and amusing. But then I was in college at that point, and I got into a class talking. It was called Ethnic Notions, and it talked about blacks and then Indians or Native American, and then also gender-based, you know, like depictions in literature. So for the black section, I was reading things like Nella Larsen's Passing, James Weldon Johnson's An Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man. We watched the movie Bamboozled. I mean, and we talked a lot about blackface minstrelsy and the depiction and degradation of black people. So, but when I heard the music of Gus Cannon, I heard retentions of that older style, but also at the same time, I heard that he's expressing himself very much in a non-degradatory manner for him.
So for you, it was like, okay, maybe there's more to blackface minstrelsy than I've been taught in class.
Well, because all I was ever hearing was, blackface minstrelsy is a bunch of white guys making fun of black guys. But when you bring black participants after several decades of this first round of blackface minstrelsy, it starts becoming a bit more complex when you think of black people making fun of the white guys making fun of black people. It starts becoming very complex.
And it that complexity, one of the songs that you focus on in your article is a song called Can You Blame the Colored Man, which Gus Cannon recorded back in 1927, but which looks at an even earlier event of black and white coming together.
Well, you know, one thing people don't tend to think about when they're looking back at this stuff is the timeline in which people were performing the songs and also where the material comes from. So when I first started researching the article, I found that, you know, I'd need to find out what this actual event was, because all I could find about it was that Booker T. Washington and Theodore Roosevelt had dinner in the White House, caused a controversy. That was pretty much all I had seen in any previous things. And so this song is an actual parody of another song that was popular in 1901 when the dinner happened. It was a song called Just Because She Made Them Goo-Goo Eyes.
Wanna home and cup to brush, you ain't so warm. Is the best what is, and I need a in my bill. It's just the case you made them a goo-goo-goo eyes.
So, and it was popular as a black minstrel song.
It was a black minstrel. It was white guys performing it, but it was popular in both the black and white communities around the turn of the century.
So it was blackface minstrelsy.
It was blackface minstrelsy, but it was accepted by both the black and white community, mm-hmm, because it was such a popular number that this parody version that Gus Cannon does, I mean, there's no telling where he actually got it, if he saw it on stage, locally, someone writing about it, because it's definitely taking the perspective of rural black Southerners that are watching these events unfold, because that was the main controversy, is once the idea of a white man, a black man sitting in the White House having dinner came down south, that's when the controversy really exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on top of the actual political implications around the dinner.
Right. And as you write in your article, controversial both among the white and the black. There were even black people thinking, what is Booker T. Washington doing at the White House with Theodore Roosevelt?
Well, because this is 10 years before people are actually speaking out for civil rights. So this is a time when someone does something that is not with the status quo, the black community has to retract, because they say that they're not part of us. Because, again, people are afraid of the implications. They're afraid of getting lynched. Mm. They're afraid of being ostracized. And it's both the black and white communities had to retract and say, oh, hold on, you know.
There's a lot going into this little song from 1927. Listen to Gus Cannon and a song called Can You Blame the Colored Man?
Thank you.
Booker T, he left Tuskegee to the White House. He went one day. He was going to call on the president, and a quiet and a sociable way was in his car. I was feeling fine. Now when Booker knocked on the president's door, old Booker, he began to grin. Now he almost changed his color when Roosevelt said to come in, we'll have some dinner in a little while. Now could you blame the colored man for making them blue eyes? And when he sat down on the president's table, he began to smile. Eating lamb, ham, feeling low, chicken, turkey, feel on toe.
That is Gus Cannon, who for a while was known as Banjo Joe for reasons that you can hear. He's a fine banjo player in addition to singing his song, Can You Blame the Colored Man? We're speaking with Dom Flemons, multi-instrumentalist and singer himself, former member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and his own album coming out in July is called Dom Flemons, American Songster, Prospect Hill. You can catch Dom at the Brooklyn Folk Festival on Friday, April 18th. He's here with us on Soundcheck looking at this complicated figure, sort of on the margins of American music nowadays. But in 1927, he's singing about this controversial 1901 dinner at the White House, Booker T. Washington, Teddy Roosevelt. What do we take away? What is Gus Cannon's take on this 26 years later?
Well, the strangest thing about the song is that all of the jokes and the political commentary are all implicit rather than explicit. And see, that was the most important reason for me to research the event itself, because the song itself is like, oh, okay, well, Booker T has these buffoonish qualities that he's being shown as, you know, loving a bunch of chicken and lamb and stuff like that.
But also when Teddy Roosevelt says, come on in, we'll have dinner in a while, you know, all the color drains out of his face.
Yeah, well, see, well, because he even grins at the door, and then he smiles when he sits down at the table. And so a lot of this old minstrel influenced music, all of the words are extremely important. Mm. And so even the thing about he was in his car and he was feeling fine, when I researched it, Booker T. Washington traveled by train up from Tuskegee all the way up to Washington, D.C. all the time, and he was in his segregated car. Train car.
Right.
So to me, that made sense that he's in his car. He's feeling fine because, thank God, I'm in my own black car and segregated car. And again, that's me pushing the implications around what I was able to find, showing the actual historical facts around the event itself.
Mm-hmm. And once again, Dom's article for Oxford American Magazine about Gus Cannon is on our website, soundcheck.org. And so, Dom, when your record comes out in July, it will include a Gus Cannon song.
Yes, it
so
will.
So you actually, you know, you found something there that spoke to you on perhaps a deeper level, I guess.
Well, I find the songs to be absolutely amazing, the words and the stories that they tell, and also just the attitude that's being presented in a lot of these songs. And for me, I got into this particularly with the Memphis songsters, they have these songs that to me remind me of modern hip-hop in a lot of ways, and also like things like Calypso, where there are social commentary mixed into the lyrics as well as being just very fantastic songs. And so that was something that I enjoyed. Also, banjo-wise, Gus Cannon has a very unique style of banjo. I think only, I guess, like, you know, with Pete Seeger just passing, he's the only person who plays in such a varied style of banjo in that particular way. You know, most people play a certain genre of style.
Right. Now, you have a couple of banjos here in the studio today.
Oh, yeah.
But the one you're going to play for us now is a four-string.
Yeah.
Is this the kind of banjo that Gus Cannon would have played in the 1920s?
No, not at all. He would have played a standard five-string banjo in a slightly different tuning than I do it. But I started playing on the four-string banjo just from a friend of mine gave me a five-string without a fifth string on it. So I just learned off of that, and I've just kept up with that ever since. So for me, it's my own interpretation of how to play this stuff with the style I developed, you know, and I've been very fortunate. People have enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. So what song do you want to do?
I'll do one called My Money Never Runs Out, which is actually the next song that Gus Cannon did in that very Paramount session.
Back in 1927.
Yep.
Dom Flemons, live in the Soundcheck studio.
All right.
Flirting yellow joker living round this town. He just as lazy as lazy can be. Now as long as they flirt, boys, he hangs around. I love my hops, is he. Early one morning, this joker ran away to roam the world, was said. I believe I'll go back to bed, man, I give up my head. I don't care if I never wake up. Yes, I don't care if I never wake up till the birds is through with me. Now I'm coming around here with my big fold. I'm gonna run 'em up a tree. Nothing like a living like a money king. Drink from a silver cup. I eat pork and pears. I eat out of my class. I don't care if I never wake up. No, please. Money's boys was stacked high. I believe my soul would touch the sky. I polish people in the diamond dust, man. I don't care with this banjo bass, 'cause my money don't never run out. You rich fools, you are making me shout. Every good evening, this sweet old toast I shout. Yes, I'm a living a good all the time. Don't drink no beer and no cheap wine. And I always fight, 'cause my money don't never run out. Toast I shout. Yes, I'm a living a good all the time. Don't drink no beer and no cheap wine. And I always fight, 'cause my money don't never run out.
Dom Flemons live here in the Soundcheck studio, singing an old Gus Cannon song called My Money Never Runs Out, and playing his four-string banjo here on Soundcheck as well. Would Gus Cannon, do we know, would he have done the Pete Townsend-style windmilling thing on his banjo?
he was said to know to have done a tune where he juggled the banjo and he threw it up in the air and spun it around. And that was a whole other part of this stuff. It was real.
Is that where Pete Townsend got the windmill from? Did he know Gus Cannon?
No. He did say he got that from. He said he saw Keith Richards do it one time at a Stone show, and he stole it for entertainment purposes.
Right.
You know.
Now, Gus Cannon, I mean, for all that we've been talking about these songs from 1927, we heard a 1963 recording by the guy.
Yeah.
And he lived a long time.
Yes, he lived until, I believe he lived to about 1976 or 78, and it was one of those things where these guys were around for years and years. I mean, like, see, when I interviewed Tony Thomas about Gus Cannon, and I talk about him in the article, there were a couple of things. Like, one, these types of songs were what Tony was describing as swagger songs. So they were songs that talked about, even though the people were poor and didn't have certain things, it was songs about talking about having those things or pushing the limits.
I got to tell you, Dom, while you were singing that, I was flashing ahead to, like, you know, modern hip hop.
That's right.
You know, the kind of the braggadocio, mm-hmm, that we hear in a lot of songs.
Absolutely.
Today. echoes of it, in, you know, almost 100 years ago.
Well, and it's there's so many, again, there's a lot of implications, because this is before a time when people in the black community could just outwardly speak out. Because now things are open in a way that people can say a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff gets out there. But this
right.
was at
and,
a time.
And a black man having dinner at the White House
exactly,
nowadays.
That, yeah. Well, see, that
we're
was,
not surprised at that.
Exactly.
Well, he's an amazing story, Gus Cannon, and it is a story told at some length by Dom Flemons in this article for Oxford American Magazine, which you should definitely check out on our website, soundcheck.org. Dom's own album called Dom Flemons, American Songster, Prospect Hill, comes out in July and will include the song that he just played for us. You can catch Dom at the Brooklyn Folk Festival on Friday, April 18th. Dom, this has been a real ear opener. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me. It's just a great pleasure.
The first time I was down in Memphis, I was down on Madison Street. I met an old friend of mine. He said, "What's that boy got in that suitcase?" I told him it was old banjo. He said, "Can you play it?" I said, "Sure, I can play it." He said, "Can you play the Madison Street Rag?" I said, "I'll play it if you whistle it." He said, "Well, I'll whistle it." I said, "Well, whistle it then." Here he goes.
A new song by the southern rock band Drive-By Truckers was inspired by Lee Atwater, the guitar-playing Republican Party strategist whose controversial tactics guided President George H.W. Bush to victory in 1988. We'll hear that song next, when Drive-By Truckers join us for an acoustic set in the studio. This is Soundcheck.
Put your cigarette out and get your hat back on. Don't mess up with your switch.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In the background, you're hearing the lead-off track from the brand new album by Drive-By Truckers. It's a Stonesy little rave-up with a title that I can't say on the radio. Why is it all the good songs, we can't play them or even talk about them on the air? Well, fortunately, the new Drive-By Truckers album, called English Oceans, is packed with lots of other great songs, most of which are safe for public consumption. Notice I said most. The band's core members and songwriters, Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley, are here to play some of those songs for us. This first one features Mike on lead vocals. It's Drive-By Truckers with an acoustic version of Made Up English Oceans.
Six by nine counting down, and one after the other, they'll go running up and down the road, angry as their mother, over sense of sacks of selfishness on made up English oceans, and made up English stomach contents tied to senseless notions. Once you grab them by the pride, their hearts are bound to follow their natural fear of anything less manly or less natural. Then gunless sheriffs caught on lonesome roads that live to tell it how hard it is for meaner men without the lead to sell it. Because only simple men can see the logic in whatever smarter men can whittle down till you can fit it on a stick and get it stuck like mud and bugs to names that set the standard. They'll live it like it's gospel, and they'll quote it like it's scripture. Six by nine and counting down, in one after the other, they'll go running up and down the road, angry as their mothers, over senseless acts of selfishness on made-up English oceans, and made-up English stomach contents tied to senseless notions. No matter if they dress real nice and sit up straight and stiff and say their prayers in quiet ancient tones, they're no different than the ones that close their eyes and fall down to the ground and twitch like all their nerves have come undone. so be it. If they come to find out, feeling good's as easy as denying that there's day or night at all. Do what it takes to feel a thing seems so far out of reach, they just claw their skin and grind their teeth and bawl.
Made Up English Oceans from Drive-By Truckers. Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley playing the guitars, Mike singing that song from the album called English Oceans, which is out now, a brand new record from Drive-By Truckers, full band on the album version of that with some nifty kind of keyboard playing in the background. Mike, first of all, Mike Patterson, to the both of you, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, great to be here.
So where does that phrase, made up English oceans, come from?
I was, I was at the beach when I came up with it. Sometimes it's really that obvious.
Were you in England?
No, I was in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Partly there is no English ocean, so right. That's... But the chorus is referring to a couple of urban legends from... probably all of our maybe middle school, junior high, involving two really successful British pop stars at the time. I don't know how I ended up thinking about that, but I ended up dragging it into this song because it's about opinion making. It's about manipulating public opinion to support a particular agenda. It's basically saying, look at the stuff they're already willing to believe, and they just heard this from their buddies at school.
So was this inspired by the late Lee Atwater?
Somewhat, I mean, I was watching, you know, how what we were just talking about has kind of become, it has become very scientific. I started looking into that, you know, I got kind of interested in the actual science of the human nature and how that wiring, how you can tap into that wiring in a person's brain and, you know, get a predictable result. But back then, you know, all roads lead to Lee Atwater when you start looking at that. And it seemed to come natural to him.
Yeah, because
it wasn't a science.
He was, if before all those,
before all
that,
that science.
Right.
I mean,
and
now it's, you know, they use focus groups and they've actually determined, you know, and the behavioral sciences have actually determined why it works.
Mm-hmm. But he somehow innately knew how to get the first George Bush elected.
Right.
And as your narrator in that song, Made Up English Oceans, is so good at doing, the obfuscation, the elusive qualities of language make it possible. I mean, I have to say, I listened to that song two or three times. I really like it. And I'm reading along with the lyrics, and I'm still thinking, what the hell does it mean? And I guess, you know. Job well done.
Well, right. It touches on faith.
Yeah.
And how that's a big part of it. You know, gun culture, using your sense of masculinity to manipulate you.
Now, the two of you have basically kind of you've split this album pretty much down the middle, right?
Well,
in terms
much,
of songwriting
yeah.
duties.
Yeah, this is the first album we've actually gotten to pull that off on. It's been fun. It's made it more fun to do things like this.
So, Mike, having done much more songwriting for this record than past Drive-By Truckers records, what was the occasion for this kind of like flowering of song, or this burst of songwriting?
Going almost 4 years without making a record and having a tour behind it mostly, I mean, I have to have time to do it. And, you know, I've read about people who write a lot more songs than I do and a lot better songs than I do that say the same thing. It's like they never write on the road. You just can't.
Right.
Some people do, but I just can't get my head in that space.
And then once you have the songs, it seems like this album came about
pretty quickly.
Really quickly. We you know, the band's in a really great place right now. The lineup's really good, and everybody's playing good. And the shows that we played last year, we didn't play, you know, that many shows for us. It was a lot of time off. And so it was kind of like whenever we could get together and play, it was almost kind of like a treat.
Yeah.
And when we started, you know, the songs started coming in, and it's like, you know, what I wanted to hear was the sound of this band basically playing those songs as just live as possible.
Now, what about what you guys are doing for us today? Just the two of you, unplugged, two acoustic guitars. Do you do this much?
We've
been doing it more lately.
It's
fun.
We've been doing it this week. It's been fun. A lot of fun.
I mean, I kind of imagine that 29 years ago, this is how it all started.
Yeah, we weren't very good at it.
No, we weren't.
But two guys in a room with guitars.
Yeah, I mean, we met because we became roommates. We met on the day I moved into an apartment that he was the other roommate at. And, you know, and I was like, you got a guitar. I got a guitar, you know. And we were both broke, so we did a lot of sitting around drinking beer and playing our guitars because that was about all we had money to do.
Right. And what would you have been playing back then?
God, I mean, that was the year the Replacements Tim came out. I was pretty obsessed with that record. And I think REM had Fables of the Reconstruction that fall. We went and saw them that fall, I remember. And it was 85, so there were a few pretty good records that came out that fall.
Yep. Speaking with Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley of Drive-By Truckers, and as we've been speaking, Patterson has been kind of making strumming motions at his guitar as if he's itching to play the next song. Now, this is one of yours. Called The Part of Him.
The Part of Him.
And sort of continuing with the theme of the Lee Atwater-inspired tune that we heard a moment ago.
Yeah, you know, you could say that after Lee Atwater died, you know, The Part of Him was played by, you know...
any number of other people.
Carl Rove, yeah. And there'll be someone next. You know, someone else will do it next. So it's kind of about that.
The new album from Drive-By Truckers is called English Oceans. The band is performing here in New York at Terminal 5 on March 20th. Patterson and Mike are playing for us acoustic here in the Soundcheck studio. This song's called The Part of Him.
Southern boys to vote for you and leave your name hanging at the door. But he must have said some things that made them think that he was strange, made them wonder if he was one of them. Called him in and questioned him, but he wouldn't make amends, so they had to reel the truth to you. Don't think he ever set out to. He was indifferent to honesty. His positions were preordained to help conceal his vast disdain for anything that lessened his appeal. His integrity was phoning in, totally Nixonian, honing art of making deals. worked an honest day, just kissed up to a better way, to sell the cow that you could get for free. And when he got out of line, they snatched him up from behind and put him in a box with fancy trim. Called him out for all to see, his rendezvous with destiny. Now someone else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him.
From Drive-By Truckers, that is The Part of Him, a song from their new album, English Oceans. Patterson Hood singing, playing guitar, Mike Cooley playing guitar as well. Founding members of the veteran band Drive-By Truckers with us here in the Soundcheck studio today. And performing here in New York on March 20th at Terminal 5 in support of the new record, English Oceans. Patterson, the album ends with a really heartfelt song called Grand Canyon. What's the story here?
Grand Canyon was inspired by a member of our band crew family. We're pretty close-knit, you know. Mm-hmm. This particular guy, Craig Liske, had been with us for 7 years, and we were close friends for years before he worked for us. I actually used to work for him at the 40 Watt Club in Athens before our band took off, and just a dear friend, and he died really suddenly last January, actually during our annual homecoming shows we do at the 40 Watt every year, and he had played in the opening band the night of the first of the three nights we do. He opened for us and had this amazing night, and then basically went home and died in his sleep and of a massive heart attack, and like Cooley said, I don't do a lot of writing on the road, but I actually wrote that one on the bus. We right after that weekend, we had to leave 2 days later and go on tour. And getting on that bus with the empty bunk was just brutal. And on the way to our last show of that tour, going from Fort Worth to New Orleans, I wrote that song in the back lounge.
Well, that's what we're going to wrap up with. It's a beautiful song called Grand Canyon from the new album English Oceans by Drive-By Truckers. Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley have been playing Unplugged for us here in the Soundcheck studio. Guys, great to have you with us.
Hey,
thanks
so
much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Went to Grand Canyon. We stood at the expanse. We'll be right back.
That's Grand Canyon, the song that closes English Oceans, the new record from Drive-By Truckers. If you like this session, there's even more in the podcast, including more conversation and an extra song. Head over to soundcheck.org to download it now. Tomorrow on the show, the R&B star Ashanti was a franchise player for the hip-hop label Murder, Inc. in the early 2000s, singing on hits like What's Love and Foolish. Now, Ashanti is stepping out on her own with an independently released record called Braveheart, and she'll join us to talk about it. Plus, the late Ralph Ellison left behind a pretty massive record collection. We'll find out what's in it and what it can tell us about the author of Invisible Man. And live music in our studio from the British folk trio Bear's Den. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, Mike Katziff, and with Amy Pearl and our intern Ryan Kyloff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.